Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. After a wonderful Super Round, plenty of great results. The Waratahs got up for Gippa, the Rebels got up for Perrin, and also we've got a studio guest for the first part of the show I'll introduce in just a second around the shape of the game and the forum that World Rugby had last week. We'll talk Aupiki, we'll talk Six Nations, the big games coming up this weekend, England versus Ireland, of course the tipping comp, and your emails. So, with no further ado, let's introduce the guys. First up, let's go to Bryn Hall over in Japan. Bryn, welcome in, mate. Good week for you?
No, not a great week, Ross. I think it's pretty clear. I think the Waratahs came good for Super Round, but no good for the Crusaders. But happily that Benno keeps on the show, so my smile is going to be a lot bigger this week with him on the show.
Well, there's your introduction. Ben, welcome to the show. You're on to talk about the shape of the game. Got James Parsons next to you, Blues Centurion. Let's get straight into it. The shape of the game for him. What was the point? What was it about?
Yeah, thanks, Ross. Good to be here. And thanks, Bryn, for that. Like, I'm not riffing anymore, so you don't need to be nice to me. But so I've just got back. So London, we had 3 days shape of the game. We had probably the biggest stakeholders in World Rugby in one room. We had players, current players, ex-players, coaches, CEOs of all the big unions, competitions, and realising that the game's in a state where we need to improve it, not just for the players on the field in terms of safety, but the fans and the spectacle off the field as well, because there hasn't been a lot of growth in the last probably, I think, 10 to 20 years in that area. So it was exciting because we've really seen that we need to change it. So we need to change things like the TMO, what do we do with the red cards, and how do we make the game more enjoyable for people, not just in the, I guess, the current countries that love rugby, but how do we expand it into other markets as well. So it was a really good few days.
If that's the case, what are the key takeouts as far as what the fans want from what you can see?
I think the fans, when they're watching a game of rugby, they don't want to be on their phone. They want to be watching the actual game. So whether they're in the stand or they're at home watching it, they want to be entertained by tries, by good contests, by the ball moving. They want to be entertained also by understanding what the referee's doing, so easy to follow decisions. So these are all the things that we have as a foundation in the game of rugby, but there's a big space for us to move in to make it better.
And that takes everyone, including the Players Association, to get this going, right?
100%. It takes everyone to buy into what it's about. But I agree. Like, so often you hear that our game's viewed in that highlights package, whereas if we can get more ball in play and keep it really active, then people are going to be more engaged in the 80-minute product. And hopefully push them to having bums on seats and then obviously eyes on screen. So I think it's exciting. I think it's all these discussions are good, but I think the key will be how soon it can be actioned. We sort of were asked last week, why does Super Rugby have to change all their stuff and then expect our test players to go to test match level and play different rules? And I think ideally we get to a point that everyone is under the same rules and it's, I suppose, not governed differently in either hemisphere. It makes it easier for you guys when you're going up to world events and obviously makes it easier for players going between the two teams.
It's not just the ball in play, it's about the quality of the ball in play, right? It's about what's happening when the ball is in play.
Well, yes and no, because you sort of want the fatigue factor. The more ball in play, the more you fatigue. So there's potential for more errors, but it's what you can do off the back of those errors and the space you can attack.
Just one thing, Ben, I think with the fact that you've been able to go to the Six Nations and then come back to Super Rugby Pacific, there's some things that we think that should be introduced to the international game. But for you as a ref that gets to do both, I guess, hemispheres, what's the rules that you've enjoyed from Super Rugby or something from the Six Nations that you think should be, I guess, changed?
Well, I think, for a few years now in Super Rugby, the great thing about, I guess, it's a closed law trial that we get to do in these competitions. And so in Super Rugby, we've done that with the 20-minute red card. And, we saw a handful of red cards over the weekend in Melbourne, but we still saw the game move on. We still saw, 15 on 15 after that player was punished. The teams weren't punished. The fans weren't punished when, we still got some amazing games. So that's one thing that when I come back and I referee Super Rugby, it adds to part of the fixture. And the changes that we can sort of adapt down here, we can basically say, look, we've done it for a season now, we've done it for two seasons, here's the stats, here's where we're showing the game's moving. It's actually something that we can bring into international rugby. So, you go from Six Nations, you go to Super Rugby, there is a bit of a bridge at the moment, and I think we're just trying to get that a lot closer. And hopefully, I know there's going to be meetings next week about decisions that are going to be made. I think they'll be able to sign things off maybe in about a month or two. And hopefully in July, maybe in the autumn international, certainly before next year, we can start seeing those changes on the on the world stage.
That's interesting. Steve Hansen came out and said, oh, this is all very wishy-washy, but really, you've got to have a conversation in order to make the decisions in the first place, right? You can't just make a decision the first day that you meet.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got to have the right people there to make the conversation. Oh, it was amazing after, you know, day one, we talked about, okay, what can change. Day two, we actually put in a structure of how to change it. And then day three, you know, with some of the people in our room, Mark Robinson, our CEO, was there, who was really, really firm on what he wanted to change in the game. And I thought he sort of led a bit of a charge around that. And that was quite good to see. So I think there's been a commitment to be able to make those changes in those meetings to sign them off over the next few weeks. So I'm hoping we get a few green lights on a few things.
Interesting thing about that, Jipper, is that I feel like in the past, the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere haven't necessarily been on the same page around all this stuff, but it sounds like that's changing.
Sounds like it, yeah, because, I mean, if you use the 20-minute red card, they were heavily against it as players and, I suppose, the management side of the game. So, yeah, there normally is a wide gap, but I do think it is closing. The one that's always going to get probably stirred up between the two is, I suppose a collapse scrum, how many can we have? Because there's ideas of having one collapse and then you go to a free kick, but you can't go back to a scrum. You know, obviously rolling maul, once it stops once, you've got to use it. And those sorts of things, let's just say, would have an adverse reaction to a lot of people up in the north, because that's what a lot of their game's based around. And for them, that's what they enjoy. So we've got to be balanced in our approach as well, because we're all speed, 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 but that suits our game and our style of play.
But front rowers do love to scrum for penalties, and plenty of Kiwi front rowers love to do it too.
Yeah, but I must admit, you don't want to have, like, it is frustrating even as a player. If you have two collapses, like, we used to have punishments at training, that if we collapse scrums, you'd be, you know, doing a fitness punishment at the end, because it just slows everything. Like, it's annoying for players as well. Like, it actually gets quite frustrating.
While we're talking about that red card, I know, Bryn, you'd go on about this red card and how good it is. What did you make of the fact that Jordy Barrett went off for 20 minutes, then come extra time, they were even at 15 aside? Because if it hadn't gone to extra time, you wouldn't have seen that extra person come back. I don't think I'd seen that before.
That's the reason of why the 20 minute is so good. I think the Reds, you know, considering that they had their 20 minutes, weren't able to, obviously, to get the result, and the Hurricanes really held in there. But I think for a team as well, you're able to, I guess, for that 20 minutes, hold on, and knowing that you can have a guy come on to be 15 on 15 and to have a chance to win an extra time. So, you know, bar I say, it would have been great to have that at the World Cup for the Kiwis with Sam Kane going off. But, you know, I think having that and knowing how they did that bunker system as well, I think when I first saw it, I thought it was a red card. But I think the fact that they do have that kind of TMO bunker system, that they can put it as yellow card, and then, you know, the TMO can make that decision very quickly, and it's a word in the air, it's done very quickly. So I think for fans as well, it's a lot easier. And I think, Ben, do you much rather that, have the ability to be able to go to a yellow card? Because if you want to, just a question, I guess, in that game, if you saw that live, did you think there would be a red card? But the fact you have that yellow card and then the bunker can do that for you, takes a bit of pressure off you as well?
Yeah, I'm such a massive fan of the bunker. And it's not really just to take the pressure off me. I've been in situations where, you know, you have to give those big decisions in a game. The issue is that when you're giving a decision that's really important for the game, which a red card is, which might mean, 20 minutes, it's still a full red card, a full game, if you give it immediately. So if you don't use the bunker in Super Rugby, so that's a little bit of a side law there. But I think that if I was going to give that as a red card, even if I wasn't using the bunker, it would take me about 7, 8, 9, 10 replays. Okay, to be able to make that decision, yeah, to be sure. And the point of the game and the point of the bunker is to be able to speed it up. So, you know, the referee on that day was able to see two replays. Yep, it's a yellow card. It's foul play that meets that yellow card threshold. And we're going to, you know, the game's going to continue while they then go through the detail of all these extra replays to see if it should be a red card. So that's the benefit of it. It just speeds the game up.
I think that's a key point, though, just that other rule, because a lot of people with this 20-minute red card, not to get stuck on this, but will be like, oh, you know, like, it's not enough punishment. But they actually, refs have the ability in the moment to give a red card, which takes them out for the game if it's like a thuggish act. And I think that's a big part of, you know, we can't just go to the 20-minute because we don't want to, obviously, not be able to punish those players that may be, you know, doing things purposeful.
And I think that's a big I guess, question in the North. They still want to make sure that the player is getting punished. And the argument for that is that we still believe that player still is going to be punished, but the game's not going to be punished. They're going to be punished off-field, whether the sanction is, you know, a longer time, or maybe there's a monetary fine as well. So I think that's, you're right, it's a stepwise progress or process to be able to get to that point.
So when you look at the way the referees approach this forum, is that what you're giving feedback on? Is it the way that the rules are actioned? Or are you also stepping into other areas? Because, you know, everyone's got good ideas on the flow of the game. Were you given specific areas to go in? Or was it an open slather to say, well, this is what we think?
Yeah, they were just basically told from our Match Officials Association, IRMO, like, what do you guys think the game should, how should it change? And the great thing for us is that we basically say to the players, the coaches, everyone in rugby, tell us what you want, we can implement it. We can do whatever you want in terms of how you want us to referee the game, but we'll also let you know what that might look like. The big things for us around it were, you know, we want to be able to try and speed the game up as much as we can, but we also realise that the TMO protocol at the moment, there's a few little bits in there that we need to try and fix. We believe that it's important that, you know, TMO can make a live call, you know, just for an obvious forward pass, an obvious knock on, just like an AR. So that we don't then, you know, we play on and we have a try and then we have to do a review. So again, we're trying to, you know, speed up the game as much as we can. So that was a big one, you know, trying to remove the caterpillar ruck, things like that. But, you know, we need to work with players and coaches to be able to do that too. So it's quite collaborative.
From a referee's point of view, let's say we take the caterpillar. What are the issues for you with that particular thing that became so prevalent in the way that the Springboks, I suppose, were very strong, getting good field position, putting on pressure, using that?
I think it just slows the game down in terms of, you know, if they build a 4, 5, 6 person caterpillar ruck, you know, that's probably, you know, 20 seconds that you know has gone to a box kick, and it's pretty hard to be able to defend that when you're that far away when you're on the defensive line. So for us, but then we realise, we tell everyone, well, actually it's just current law to say use it within 5 seconds, so we just need to be a bit more stricter in that, and you know, that's something that we can take away from the meeting.
I think that's something you do really well, and not to blow smoke up your backside, but with the line-out and scrums, you constantly can hear you say, no, let's go, let's go. I think if that could be consistently applied, because I think we, at the beginning of last season, that was really good early. Mm. I think that I still recommend people watch that Chiefs-Crusaders game that you did down in Christchurch. That was, I just thought that was the best game ever because it was just pushed. And I think if we can get that sort of consistent application, it's just, I don't know, it just seems like it goes so much quicker.
Yeah. I've got a meeting with the boys tomorrow, so I'll let them know.
Big tick from ARP. So when you look at those conversations that go on, you know, what's your approach to the running dialogue? Because I know you see some fans go, geez, all I hear is the ref talking, and other people go, well, that's great. It allows the game to flow. What's the balance there?
So I think there's two types of running dialogue in a game. There's the running dialogue that is between the assistant referees and the TMO, and you need that. Like, the game needs to be refereed by all four of us now. It's really hard to just do it by myself. So I like my TMO talking to me during the game. I like my assistant referees talking to me about space during the game as well. I might see something, I might be obstructed. Have you guys seen that knock on? They'll then feedback the information too. But then there's a little bit of the other dialogue, which is to the players, and that's actually to try and control the game. So, you know, if there's been a really good jack or a really good contest over the ball, but that player's lost it, if I just say lost, you know, you've lost the ball, and then it means that the ball can come out and be recycled, then I'm really happy for that as a referee. I think there's a fine balance, though, because you don't want to be talking too much so that players start ignoring you, it becomes that white noise. But you want to be able to talk enough so that, you know, players that win the ball should win the ball. You have a good contest and you can keep the game moving.
And the feedback you get from the players on that, what do they say to you?
Is that good?
I think it's good, but also I think the development you guys have done by going into the super squads has actually grown both players and refs' understanding of each other. I think it's something that, you know, hopefully other nations can do, because you almost learn so much that it means there's less stoppages, there's less infringements on the weekend, because you've got someone who knows how they're going to be interpreted, and also seeing your training habits and going, well, don't train that because, you know, that's probably going to lead to a penalty. And so it's been good for coaches, players, and I think, like you say, you don't want to get into a position of coaching players in games, but you've got to let them know what you're thinking and seeing.
Were you refing Johnny Sexton at one time and he said you can't coach the players? Was that you, Ben, or was it another ref?
No, that came out of the Ireland-South Africa game at the World Cup, in the pool game. He sort of challenged me on that, and I was like, yeah, that's a good point, but look, I'm still going to tell you what I'm thinking just to help the game. It might be you, it might be, you know, it might benefit Ireland, it might benefit South Africa. But you're right, it's that, you know, we're just working through, okay, you don't want to do it too much, you know, you want it to actually, you know, be quiet enough on the field that the fans aren't hearing you all the time either too.
Johnny always had something to say, eh?
He did.
Stones and glass houses.
Yeah.
Now, before you go, I just want to touch on the croc roll, because it says here the removal of the croc roll is a key thing for player welfare and well-being. For the fans out there, what is the croc roll, and how is that having a bad effect on the game?
So my understanding of the croc roll is when the jackler's over the bull, the way to remove that is, you know, to come over the top of the back and actually roll them to the side to remove them. And I think it's sort of developed over the last few years because, you know, the jackler's gotten lower and lower onto the bull. We've created these head contact protocols where you can't hit the head, so okay, you've got to sort of come from the side. So a player over the ball who's low is really hard to move. But then over the last few years, in the Premiership, even in some international games, we've had some horrific injuries where the player's been moved to the side and the weight of the body's, you know, fallen on that limb or that joint, and, you know, has caused a really horrific injury. So I know the Players Association at this meeting, they really wanted to get rid of the croc roll for that. Whilst the incidence of the injury doesn't happen every time a croc roll happens, but it's career ending, you know, like players actually leave the field and they don't really return after that because of the injuries that they have their knee. So that's something that they wanted to bring in quite quickly. Again, as referees, it's one of those ones where we'd be able to referee it, but also if it's coached out of the game, it would make it a lot easier as well. So I think that's something that could, you know, be an easy low-hanging fruit for coaches to be able to take out of the game. But then, you know, this is the issue with these meetings is that you've got to work out, okay, if you make a change here, what is it going to mean elsewhere? And you have all these other fall-off effects that can happen when you change one rule. So that's what we have to be careful about.
A good example of that is the 50-20. Yeah, we had an email through from PLC266 on YouTube, called it a dumb rule, but I don't think that's the case, Jim.
No, I personally think it's been the best rule to be brought in, and I also think it should go a step further and you should be allowed to pass the ball back over the 50 to get a 50-22, purely because the rule allows you to manipulate defence, and defence are going to give you the pitches from an attacking point of view how to, you know, sort of put yourself in the position and take advantage of wherever the space is. So if they've got the two fullbacks or one fullback, then, you know, that kick space is going to be available. If they bring the wingers up, you know, that kick space is available. If they drop them back and there's three in the backfield, the space is on the edge. So you can get your kick pass or you can go through the hands and so forth. And what it allows is attacking rugby, because there's going to be space somewhere because you have to protect it. And if you don't, you take the kick and you take the line out close to line. It's as good as a penalty.
From a referee's point of view, when you see those changes, how much does it change what you do as far as where you're looking and where your touches are looking?
Yeah, it changes our role clarity. So I remember when the 50-22 came in, it was quite hard for us because we only really had to know if a player was inside the 22 or not, you know, if the kick went on the full. But now we've brought in this other rule where, you know, in the middle of the field, we've got a lot of dynamic tackles, rucks happening, a lot of contests, so we were really focused on that. But now we've got to throw in whether the ball's been taken back, whether it's been a tackle, whether it's been touched by the opposition, and then if it goes out inside the 22. So we had to just workshop it. We developed a bit of communication around it where, you know, I'd call 22s on, you know, as the referee, and then the assistant referee would, you know, obviously if it goes inside the 22, would know that it's to the same team. And if all else failed, we actually had the TMO coming in to help us, you know, with a quick rewind. So it's easy for us now. And I agree with James, like it's a great law because, you know, we've been able to see a lot more attacking rugby because of it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us. You've got to head off and go to a meeting, but we thank you for coming in and giving us a bit of a lowdown on how things went with the shape of the game.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure. Thanks.
Now, I don't know where to start with this, the Crusaders Waratahs, because you're probably providing the motivation for the Waratahs. Maybe Darren Coleman played last week for the team. Yeah. And Bryn, the Crusaders, you mentioned before the evening up. Let's start with you, Bryn. What's going on with the Crusaders? Is this just an evolution? It's going to take them time? Because they don't have much more time. They've got a tough draw. They've got to start getting it right.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's going in nicely to my plan of them finishing third, I think. to be honest, I think the word that I use with them is probably clunky. I think I talked around at the start of the year, unfortunately, with the All Blacks and them coming back and not getting the preseason games like other teams have. I mean, that's their choice, that they tend to have them later in the, for the first round. It takes them a while to get their mojo going. And I think you look on the weekend, they had 18 errors, which you don't see a lot with them. Their lineout was around 78%, which you don't see. And then also the steal and turnovers of the Waratahs to be able to get at the breakdown was 10. So, you know, they weren't able to build that momentum and have the rhythm throughout the game. So I think the last 2 weeks they've had moments where they've had patches that have been really good, but then they've had moments where it's been pretty horrific. So I think, you know, going to the to the Drua is going to be a really tough game. I think if you look at the start of the year, they might have been wanting to give guys opportunities, but I think being 0-2 and knowing how hard it is to win in Fiji, I guess a conversation might have to happen around sending your full strength team or pretty close to it. And then I think, you know, playing the top 23 for the next 3 to 4 rounds going into the bye with the 0-2 start.
What did you make of them?
Well, I always believe in the adage, defence wins championships, and I think the Tars' defensive pressure, and just to jump off the back of the breakdown, I thought they won the breakdown in particular defensively because they slowed the ball down and it allowed them time to get set and put that, because if you look at their try as a charge down, that's through slow ball, allowing them to get up and get in that kicking space. An intercept from Gordon, although he is a freak. We even asked him that question.
Yeah.
Does he plan it? But again, defensive pressure on the inside. And so a lot of their points came off the back of the work they did in defence. And I think you can build a season around that. They'll get a hell of a lot of confidence. And yeah, obviously big fans of the pod because I've just said, get out of here, Parsons, you don't know anything. So I'm actually really happy for Coleman because he's a great bloke and a really good man. And yeah, he was probably looking down the barrel if they didn't pull this off. And look, he'll need a couple more good weeks, but you know, from those signs and the ticker they showed on defence, they can be really confident. I do think though, like to look at the Crusaders, and this is very rare, Bryn, the amount of rugby they played in their half, 30% of their rucks were in their half. And compared to if you use the Chiefs, who were probably the best team on the weekend, you know, like I think in their own half they totaled like 12%. You know, the amount of errors they had, those 18 errors, I do think that's increased purely because they played more rugby. Yeah. So I think they've got to go back to what their DNA is, and it's not playing in their half. It's around that sort of contestable kick game, maybe using your 50-22s and so forth, and really letting the opposition, they almost strangle you to make the errors versus them making the errors.
Yeah, and I think just last year, and then I think, you know, they had 6 kicks in that first half, which, you know, they obviously had a game plan around holding the ball and wanting to be able to build phases to put the Waratahs under pressure. But, you know, you look at, I think, probably the pinnacle of the two teams in the Super Rugby Pacific is probably the Chiefs and the Blues in terms of their kicking. Now, if you look at Damian McKenzie and Stephen Perifetta, a lot of those times in the game when they weren't getting their momentum, they were putting contestable kicks on either side of the field to be able to build pressure. And then you could have a turnover attack off that, or then being able to, I guess, restart your attack. So I definitely think that'll be one thing that they want to try and change up. They obviously back themselves in and around trying to play with ball in hand, but, you know, adapting on the run is probably one thing they didn't do very well on the weekend as well. I think, you know, the set piece is a big thing around them to be able to have the momentum, but I think moving forward we might see a little bit more of the kicking game and being able to, I guess, go back to that DNA of having contested balls and putting teams under pressure that way.
They are normally the standard as well, Bryn, of when they go in the 22, they come away with points. And yep. 10 visits, 4 tries, it's very un-Crusader-like. Mm. If you give the Crusaders 10 entries into your 22, you probably 8 out of 10, wouldn't you think, Bryn, normally?
70% would be your kind of minimum around scoring points, whether that's a try or penalty. Three. So, yeah, you know, like I said, it's the 18 errors and the breakdown area, the Waratahs definitely won, having 10 turnovers. So, you know, I think we'll see a bit of an improvement around that breakdown area, being a little bit more ruthless and, I guess, possibly a leaner menu and just making it real simple for younger guys that are in their squad that haven't played probably to the continuity of some other clubs at the moment. So, yeah, I'll probably see a big shift in terms of the breakdown area for the Crusaders against the Fijian Drua this week.
And this might feel a little bit premature, but we've had an email come through from Chris Minto, and he's talking about Rob Penny. Email us on aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. He talks about his, you know, probably lack of winning records with Munster, the Shining Arcs and the Waratahs, and questioning whether he's the right man for this job. Is it a little bit premature to start going down that alley after 2 weeks?
I believe so, because he had a pretty successful record with Canterbury that led to those opportunities with those teams. Mm. And you've also got to acknowledge there's been a lot of change. You know, a lot of change in the coaching group, but a lot of change in the playing group. So there's players that are used to hearing from the Whitelocks and co, actually having to step in into those shoes and run the cutter. And do not underestimate the whole Richie Leaves. Mm. Like, he is the Crusaders. Like, he is the man. He's the guy that everyone turned to for the last 6 years when the pressure was on to lead them out of it. So, yeah, I think... I think it's not, like, they came back pretty well against the Chiefs, only, and I was only singing their praises last week. Only the Crusaders could probably find their way back to win that sort of game, and I just think they had an off day, skill set-wise, and I think they got their tactics wrong.
OK, well, that's enough about the Crusaders. Let's move on to some of the teams that won on the weekend. Firstly, let's talk about the Blues. The Blues looked really strong against the Highlanders team that really pushed them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it again, you know, talking about Richie, I think Stephen Pettifetta's, you know, he's taken the bull by the horns and directing that team around. And I think acknowledging the pack, you know, 100% compared to 80% at set piece for the Landers. And I do think that is the difference, you know, setting that platform and, you know, Hoskins Satutu allowing to, you know, play his game. But I thought Akita Ioane, 18 carries. Most carries on the field, like, he was busy. So competition in the team. I think the most pleasing thing is it's very rare we've probably seen the Blues make that many changes after a good round one win. And it can be a double-edged sword, but it shows that the wider squad, it shows to the whole squad early on, if you train well, you will get an opportunity to play, and then, you know, with that competitive edge through the week makes them better. The one area I know they won't be too happy with is again, they were probably around that 80% mark with entries into the 22 coming away with points before this game, but they were around that sort of 50% in this game. So it were for 60, they had about 64% possession and, you know, 55% territory. So they had a lot of ball and a lot of field position. They just probably would have liked to have won with a bit more points.
Bryn, this is a Highlanders team that, even though they lost that game, are showing week on week that they're probably going to be real strong by the time we get to the playoffs at the end of the year.
100%. I think, man, they've got enough there. And I think, you know, the scoreboard obviously dictated obviously how close it was. But I genuinely thought it was, even then when they scored that last try with AJ Faleanga. I think their phase attack, Chip, and their ability to be able to score very quickly. I think, you know, you look at Patchell's offload, but then there are a couple other tries that they had, like Withy's try, just examples of them being able to be really clear and executing, you know, 2-3 phases to score tries, which is really hard to do this day and age, to score off that low phase count. And I think, you know, Fanau Fakatava and Patchell, their combination, I think, is going to get a lot better. They had an outstanding combo on the weekend. And I think the Blues just really took it up another level in that last 30 minutes. I think the counter-rucking and how much bad ball they gave Hasty, who was obviously on for Fanau Fakatava early in that second half, wasn't able to get the good quick ball that they're able to get in the first half. So that's a credit to the Blues, and I think they're playing a lot of rugby at the moment. I think it's going to win them games in May, June. Their forwards are dictating a lot of the term inside the 22, and also their carries and being able to just brutally physically dominate teams. I think they did that to the Highlanders. I think they weren't able to stay with them in those periods. But no, I think the Highlanders, there's enough there. I think they're definitely going to be in contention for the finals. They'll continue to keep getting better. I think the only thing for them, I hope, is that there aren't injuries, even though they are starting to build some depth. But I'm liking what I'm seeing, especially with the combination of Fanau Fakatava and Rhys Patchell on the weekend.
Let's touch on the Chiefs, because they were incredible against the Brumbies. They can just cut a side open, Bryn, whether it's the big ball running forwards or it's those backs. They look the business.
Look, I think for that game, I think everything for them. I think, you know, look, you look at their attack, I think they're the best attacking team face play wise. The amount of questions that they ask, you look at even Sotoro's try in the 17th minute, the animation of their forwards from out the back, the pillars outside, Damien McKenzie, and then obviously Sean Stevenson gives that wide ball. But you look at Luke Jacobson in that clip, you look at the line and how deliberate he is, and he runs that line to be able to suck people in to give the likes of the opportunity out wide. Their full team is doing that all the time and asking really big questions. And even, you know, Damien McKenzie, he doesn't need a lot. I look at Richie Mwanga when he was at the Crusaders, that fourth, fifth defender. You know, if your forwards are running those tight lines, the great tip lines, and he's going at a proper or forward, it's really hard to defend. So the animation that they have in their face play shape at the moment, even their specials and the amount of preview that they're getting right, you look at the one where Damien McKenzie gets the overthrow and the inside ball. You know, Rob Valentini, you know, is the obviously... he's the last lifter at the back of that line out, and they've seen that, and they've then been able to execute and score a try off that. So attacking-wise, I think they're in a great position. But I think defensively, there were so many hits that they did on the weekend with the likes of Jacobson. You would have loved to have seen that. But his shoulders, Finau, Tupou, And I guess just all those players just absolutely smoking people physically. So, look, I think they're in a really great spot, and they've been in some great depth. You know, Brad Weber was there for a long time, but you've got Xavier Rowe who's starting well. Then you've got Cortez Arati on scoring two tries and having that 1-2 punch, which is really important in Super Rugby Pacifica, I believe. So, yeah, Chiefs have started off hot form, and I think, you know, that hangover, if you thought there would have been a hangover maybe from the last year's final, they have definitely not had a hangover at all. If anything, they're leading the team. They're leading the competition in a very, very positive way.
Yeah, I don't think they're hungover. I think they've got a bit between their teeth.
Hair of the dog.
I think they're the complete package at the moment. Like, they're putting out some world-class numbers. So on the attacking side, they had 16 clean breaks, 50% gain line percentage. So one out of two carries they're getting across the gain line. And the other ones are probably neutral. You know, there's not many going backwards. So they're clinical around the breakdown. They've got quick ball and they've got the skill set to punish defences because they don't let them set. And then defensively, like Britton said, they forced 19 turnovers. They tackled at 94%. And the key stat is at 34% gain line for the Brumbies. So again, more times than not, they are shutting them down behind the advantage line, which would be forcing them either to kick not on their terms or forcing an error. So both sides of the ball, the only thing they'd probably be disappointed is a couple of tries they butchered. Rowe probably didn't know Sean was there, but he was away, wasn't he? But other than that, and I do want to make a comparison, when they won in 2013 and 14, they were the team that kicked the most, and it was the same on the weekend. Kicked 33 times, it was the most than anyone across Super Round. And it's almost their DNA. And it's not just all long tactical kicks, there's a lot of contestable and attacking kicks in it, but using the ball on the boot is a big weapon for them. So yeah, they are, you know, Brumbies have got a bit to do though, because 77% D last week against the Rebels, 82.5% defence this week. That's just not Brumbies. The Brumbies are your low 90s, like it's almost a given. So I don't know what's happening with their defensive systems. They can't slow the ball down, which doesn't allow them to get set, which doesn't allow them to make dominant tackles. And it's not like they don't have big bodies of their own. So there's huge concerns for the Brumbies. I don't think they'll be the shining light that they have been for Aussie rugby in the past.
Now, the game of the weekend, well, there are probably two of them. One, Pacifica versus the Drua, we'll touch on first, 39-36, an absolute belter. A gutsy finish from Wana Pacifica with two people in the bin, the Drua coming at them hard, and they still managed to get there.
Yeah, and I think tactically they remained calm because they took that 3 points late in the game when they had those cards, and that 3 points was the difference. You know, had they gone for the corner and not scored, we would have had another golden point game. But I just think the work they're doing during the week is allowing them the opportunity to deliver on Saturday, and it's no surprise to me for who they've got in there. But you know, we go on about it. Old type five Parsons, yap yap yap. But Tom Coventry did it with the Chiefs. He really steeled up the Blues pack, and his fingerprints are all over that pack. He's a fantastic teacher, delivers his message with a great tone, and is almost infectious. You know, you want to do well for him. It's like that father figure. You don't want to let him down. So,
and you're his son.
Yeah, apparently so, apparently so. But there's a lot to work on. Their line-out wasn't sharp. Their scrum struggled at times, but also dominated at other times. But, you know, we speak about it in terms of the balance. 33 kicks for the Chiefs, 15. I just think you'll run out of steam. You can't... Like, it was a great game, don't get me wrong. Both sides didn't kick at all, and they went from end to end. But to win championships, you've got to play rugby where you want to play rugby, not in the hope that you're going to do something special and waste energy. If you're going to waste energy and have 10 rucks in your own half and then just kick it away aimlessly, you might as well kick it off the first phase. So, I think they need to sort of work on that kick strategy. And then defensively, they were in the low 80s. So, again, it's that breakdown. They need to slow the ball down so they can get set. It's not a tackle thing. For me, it's definitely... We know they can tackle. We know they can hit players behind the gain line, but they need to slow that ball to allow themselves the opportunity to do it.
Well, and because guys like Ravu Tamunda will get you.
How good was that try?
Incredible.
With Darren Lungi, I think. Oh, my God. How was he untouched? Like, he just flew. Mm. Like, that was... I screamed like with excitement. My wife was like, "What? Do you have to scream all the time?" I was like, "Mate, how can you not? Go have a look at this." And even she was impressed, so that, I think that's saying something.
He was in everything. He was in the yellow cards. Yeah. He was in the tries.
He definitely made up for the yellow card, though, didn't he?
He did. He was something else. So, so good. And the other big game of the weekend, the Canes-Reds. We talked a bit about it before, Golden Point, and how good a game that was. The Hurricanes getting through in that game. Bryn, what do you put it down to?
Geez, just a bit of grit and resilience, I think. I think the Reds, really came up to play for that game. I think their forward pack, especially inside the 22 and their line out more, were able to put the Hurricanes under a lot of pressure, especially in the early part of that game. And then I think after that red card, you know, the game was definitely in the balance. And I think the ability of, you know, that Cam Roygaard try to be able to tie it all up. And then I think for that last 10 minutes, the Reds had the opportunities. I look at the 71st minute, the no knock on by Rabai, and that was a huge moment. And then I think Ruben Love diving on that ball and showing some effort around being able to try and stop that try was massive. And I think Tossi had two big massive plays. I think, you know, the steal that he had to be able to put them in a position to then go down to the corner and then score that try, I think, to show the composure with a lot of young guys coming on in that extra time period to get the job done. It just showed a lot of grit and resilience. There'll be a lot of review from that. They could have done better, but I guess to be able to be in that position, a red card, find solutions and to get the job done, where I think the Reds probably let that one go away with those two opportunities in the 71st and 75th minute.
Discipline for me. I reckon The Hurricanes are the real deal. They've got the squad, they've got the maturity. 14 penalties and they couldn't stop a driving maul. If you're going to give teams that many entries into your 22, you're going to have to steel up that defence. Because that's the only difference I felt. That's the only area the Reds won, was that driving maul. That's how they got the bulk of their points off the back of ill discipline. So, you know, the Hurricanes, 91% defence. You know, they put the Reds under immense pressure. They got nearly 55% gain line. So, again, it's all there. The stats are all there, but that 14 penalty count and that inability to stop a driving maul will be their two focuses, I believe. Because I just don't think the Reds would have been in the game had they not given away that many penalties. I know that sounds harsh, and it was, but the Reds did tackle at 82%. You know, like you're not going to be a force. Their forward pack is a real weapon. Don't get me wrong, but they somehow need to ignite their attack out wide. They can't just rely on Paisami to just crash it over the game line and maybe, you know, Jordan Pitaia, doing a freakish. They need some real phase play threats. Les Kiss is a league coach, so you know he'll have the ability to sort of train into them that sort of running lines and, you know, out the back plays and so forth. But if they don't get any bodies in motion that challenges defences, I don't see the Reds. They'll at this rate potentially make the eight, but I don't think they'll push for a semi or a final.
We'll come back through to Super Rugby in a moment when we do our tipping. Have a look at our tipping comp towards the end of the show. But let's go to the Six Nations for now. Big weekend. England versus Ireland, obviously the big one. Italy versus Scotland and Wales versus France. This Ireland-England game is an absolute ripper. Reports out of England are pretty interesting this week, talking about how they're focusing almost completely on their defence, on mimicking the box defence, the blitz defence, getting up, with the reports saying that the backs are almost not touching it in practice, despite the fact they're not scoring at all. They do have Marcus Smith back this week, which probably should help their attack. But, Jip, when you look at a team that's almost solely, if this is true, practising defence, is that a position that England should be in, that they're building one small bit at a time in order to be successful, or do they have to focus on all elements of the game?
I definitely think you have to focus on all elements. You'd hope there are some key pillars there that you don't have to labour the point too much, because they are at the highest point of the game. What I would say that concerns me, if backs aren't touching the ball, then their blitz D isn't working, because the whole reason you do blitz D is to force errors to then attack off. So maybe they should play a few more phases if they are forcing those errors. But I agree, like, blitz D, you've got to train a lot. You do, because like if you don't get it right, it can end in tears really quick. So I think there is an understanding of that, you know, if that is their game plan, then they probably do need to spend the time on it. Because if they don't know each other inside out and how they're going to do it, then there'll be gaping holes against an Irish side that has great depth and great punch onto the ball. Could get ugly.
Yeah, I think to go to Jip's point, I think the line speed blitz defense takes a lot of time. It's just not a 1 to 2 week thing, and I'm not too sure if that's been their defenses and that it's been that high of pressure. They have shown a form of being able to get a little bit high and putting teams under pressure, but if they're talking about the Springboks blitz defense, like sometimes they're going 3 to 4 in, and they're leaving 3 or 4 guys on the outside. That's how, you know, the Springboks would put teams under pressure. I guess, you know, I think for me personally, I think it'd be more so around the physicality breakdown and being able to slow down the ball. I think when you've shown, you know, when the French have won games, the All Blacks winning games, that they were able to slow down Ireland, not all the time, but for long periods of the game, being able to frustrate them and not get that continuity and being able to play on top of teams, which the Chiefs do have been doing for an example. So I think, you know, if they're going to have that mindset, hopefully you have to think if they're all spending a lot of time on their defense, they'll be at least most for the majority of the game having a clear understanding of what their role is, of who they need to get to, and then, you know, being able to put the backs under pressure. But if that's what they're going to do, it must be a lot of kicking, going to be able to go into effort areas around their box kicking, their contestable games, and I guess trying to strangle the Irish, like I guess the South Africans have done in the past.
Sometimes less is better as well. Like their attack just has had no mojo all season. So maybe doing less of it might, you know, make the back three hungry to get involved and prove a point. Mm. You know, like in a weird way, it might work for them. And Marcus Smith potentially coming back would be extremely helpful for that, because he is their natural attacker, isn't he?
Mm. And with him in the 10 jersey as opposed to 15.
That's where I'd have him. If they're struggling to light their attack up, someone like Marcus Smith with how flat he'll sit and the defenders he'll attract, then there's that space elsewhere. And if the back three are annoyed they're not touching the ball at training, well, they can change that by doing it on game day and make a point to the coach.
If you look at that and then look at what Ireland are doing right now, is there any chance? Do you see a world where England get up at Twickenham?
I think the fact that it's Twickenham, you've got to be respectful enough to give them, yeah, you know, a real chance. I do think that home fan base is big in the Six Nations, but I mean, it's Ireland's to lose. Like, they are just so clinical at the moment. Like, it's hard to really, like, I genuinely think they've got better since the World Cup and they've had Johnny Sexton leave, which, to be honest, has surprised me.
Yeah, but let's have a look at these games on the weekend then, with our tipping. Okay, England, Ireland, obviously, you think Ireland, yep, and same for you. Yep. Italy versus Scotland, I think.
Scotland.
Scotland away. You're quite happy with Scotland away?
Scotland.
Yeah, despite the fact that Italy looked relatively good against France, even though France were a bit weak a couple of weeks ago?
No, I just think what's on the line for Scotland, and I think they've shown the last couple of years the games that they should win. You know, against Italy or Wales, they've been able to do that. So I don't see that change. I think they get a win, and hopefully with a bonus point, and then gives them opportunity to go for the Six Nations in that following week against Ireland.
Right, and then Wales versus France. Tough one.
Where is it? Millennium Stadium?
It is.
I'll go home, Team Wales.
Yeah.
Again, it's a little bit of a squad one for me. I need to see the 23s to have a real strong
feel, where it's
feel
going
for it. But yeah, on gut and the way the French are playing. But if there's ever a side in world rugby that can turn it around in a week, it's the French.
Yeah.
They could be amazing. So,
but we can tell you who's not going to be there for the French, though, and that's probably as important as anything.
Yes. But that result against Italy, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, Wales have had their moments. They've actually looked quite good at times. So yeah, Wales.
Wales. And for you, Bryn?
Yeah, I want to pick Wales, but I think with the pressure that's on that French team though, with their game against Italy, you just have to think they'd bar up. And look, they've been there or thereabouts, you know, number one, number two in the world before this year, and you'd have to think they would have something to, you know, having that kind of calibre of a team for that long period of time would have to count for something. I know Dupont's not there, but yeah, I reckon there'd be a fire burning in the French, so I'm going to pick the French, but would not be surprised if the Welsh get the win though as well.
Oh, I love it when this happens. I do love it. Next week, let's see. Let's see who wins. Okay, moving on. Super Rugby Opiki, opening weekend on the weekend, some incredible performances across the board. There's a couple of people I want to talk about in particular. The Blues got up against Matatu, didn't look that good to start with, but there were standout performances with the likes of Niall Williams-Guthrie, moving from the centres into open side flanker, coming up with the play of the game, probably. Incredible player.
Incredible play. And to see where she came from, the effort to not give up on that play, very sevens-esque, because they're so used to defending when all hope looks like it's failed that, you know, you can still pull off miracles. But we said last week that she's a massive player for the younger players to look at in terms of professionalism and how she goes about her business. I didn't foresee her playing at seven, but man, she made a good fist of it, and I think her time in sevens probably gives her the ability to know, you know, the tackle jackal or counter rucks, ruck positions. So yeah, extremely exciting for the Blues, and Sylvia, one of her Sylvia's carries, like, geez, she's tough to slot. She was great last year for the Black Ferns, and it looks like she's got even better. The one thing I loved about Opiki, and I think it's for the first weekend ever since this competition, and don't get, I suppose, confused by the scoreline in the Manawa Poa game, it was tight. Mm. And that, again, like the Super Rugby Pacific, keeps eyeballs on it. It's exciting. It's, you know, it's got real tense intrigue right to the end, so it's a great start for that competition. Talk about it being an entertaining product. Well, not a lot of the teams have a kick strategy, so they literally run it from everywhere. So that ball and play is very high, which is a big difference in the female game. I would just say don't sleep on the Poa. 10 debutantes, they are extremely well coached and well drilled. They were so accurate at set piece. Yes, Luca Connor got one maul try, but there was six or seven attempts, particularly in the first half. And there was a moment where they opted to take the three in the second half, and the game was in, you know, and they were sort of in that two-score zone. And the 3 points didn't make a lot of sense because it only took them to within 9 points. And I felt like they had them on the pressure. They had had three penalties in a row. If they'd, you know, tapped it, gone to a scrum or gone to the line out, if there's another penalty, that's a card. And potentially you're getting the 7 points, and then you're right. I just felt like that was a turning point. They took the three, they got the three. But from that, the Manawa got down their field and pretty much scored three tries on the bounce after that. So it was a disappointing finish for the Poa, but, man, for a young team, and Hannah King, the first five, I think she's 20. if you haven't seen the game, watch it. Like, you talk about flat to the line, ball in two hands, courage, like running, you know, in between bodies and putting herself on the line, freeing up her outsides on debut. Mate, I genuinely think she's a future Black Fern 10.
Blues versus Chiefs Manawa, where do you see that going, Bryn?
Well, if the Blues can continue with their forward pack and the way that I thought they played against Matatu, I think they're definitely a big shot, considering with the outside backs of Brunt and, I guess, DeMont there as well. And Cottrell, I thought, was actually quite well, managed the game really well. But I think the Chiefs, you know, they've got the depth in the squad. They've got that pedigree, and I think they'll just get the job done against the Blues, and improving Blues team.
Heart says Blues. But head, Crystal Murray coming off the bench. Like, they've got Black Ferns coming off the bench. It just seems the squad's just too...
Yeah.
And they didn't play their best footy on the weekend. They were put under immense pressure by the Poa, so they won't be happy with that. And I think a few people in new positions, new combinations, they'll be better for it. I think the Chiefs win. I'll still obviously have to pick the Blues, but yeah. I think the Chiefs will win.
Poa Matatu?
Can the Poa back it up? Yep.
You think the Poa will get up?
Yep.
All right. Okay, that's a big, bold call. What do you think, Bryn?
Yeah, I'm not going to go for the Poa. I think Matatu will be pretty disappointed not being able to get that job done, considering they did have a bit of a buffer in that second half and weren't able to get the job done. But I'll go Matatu just based around the experience and, yeah, I guess, a bit of a hunger to get that win of the season. But yeah, I was pretty impressed with the Poa.
You'll go Matatu because you're a crusader. Just be honest, mate. At least I put it out there. At least I say when my patch is on.
I think they'll come back. They'll come back with a fire. I think losing that game. So, but I think for what you said, the Poa, I was pretty impressed with the Poa, and I just think it's going to be going to be a tight game, so I'll go Matatu. I'll go against you, Joe. I've got to go against you, don't I?
Devastating midfield.
Can't have it all there.
They'll need to warm up their shoulders.
He's played his not Canterbury card by saying that the Crusaders will come third in the round robin. So
yeah, yeah. That's, but he went back on that last week because he got bloody peer pressured by the players ringing.
Okay, rightio. Well, let's move on to the Super Rugby tipping. It was an interesting round in the Super Round, but obviously a bit to go in this round. Everyone fell off a little bit in the tipping last week. Now, a reminder, we're going to do what we did last year. If you win our tipping comp, go to tipping.super.rugby, go to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. You have the chance to come on the show. We had a great time with last year's winner, Lim's Jerseys. He was a really good fella. So let's have a look at the tips for this round. Moana Pacifica versus the Rebels.
Moana Pacifica.
Moana Pacifica. Chippers Waratahs versus the Highlanders. Where do you see that going?
Where's that being played?
Tars.
No, I think the Highlanders. I think the Highlanders have shown enough in the past 2 weeks, and I think with what they're doing, first play and first phase, and their attacking ability, I think they'll take the learnings of how they can get better in that breakdown, especially in the second half, attacking-wise, and they'll get the job done against the Waratahs.
All the lessons. couldn't help myself.
James Parsons won't let grammatical incorrectness go by.
Highlanders for me.
Highlanders for you?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. The Tars aren't tempting you after their performance?
No, as I said, the Highlanders put in a pretty impressive shift, I felt, against the Blues.
Nice. Okay, Drua versus Crusaders. This is an interesting game.
It is.
In Fiji.
I'm going to have to go to the Crusaders. They lost there last year. There's going to be a few demons.
Yeah.
They've got to come right.
Well, that, I mean,
that second half against the Chiefs, they've got it in them.
Yeah. Difficult, though.
Yep. Yep.
Not an easy call. You're going Crusaders, I presume, Bryn?
Yeah, we'll go the Crusaders. I think I'm just going to be interested to see who's actually going to go, you know, whether they were going to send the strongest 23 or close to it.
They'll be sending their strongest, man. There's no way they're going over there undercooked again. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that as well. So, and the fact that they did lose there last year, they'll take the lessons in knowing that it's going to be a big week for them, not only just for that Fijian draw, but for their season as well.
Being 0-3 would not be nice. Okay, the Brumbies versus the Force. This is an interesting clash.
Brumbies are just... I just don't get it. I can't work out how they've defensively just lost the plot. But the Force haven't really impressed me either compared to their pre-season form. I'd love them to put Chase Teatea at 15. He needs to be more involved because he's that X factor. Canberra, they've got to come right. It's a great squad. Like, when you read through their squad, they've got the players, so it's a system thing for me.
If you're going on form right now, Bryn, Brumby's Force could be a battle at the end of the year for the Wooden Spoon, which seems crazy.
Oh, I think possibly, maybe for the Force. I agree with Joe. I just think the Brumbies have got to come right. Pretty similar to the Crusaders, you know. You almost wanted them to get it right, and I think this week they'll get it done. In Canberra, just hearing Lonergan after his match interview, he didn't seem too happy, so I think there'll be a bit of tough love in that week. So, yeah, I'm going to go to the Brumbies to get it done. But, yeah, they're not playing the greatest rugby at the moment, but they've got to come good, pretty similar to the Crusaders, you'd have to think.
This is the tip I've been looking forward to. Canes versus Blues in Wellington.
Blues.
100%.
Yep. I think Geordie Barrett probably won't be there after the judiciary.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a big hole. Mind you, I thought Riley Higgins was pretty sharp off the bench. Nice little offload that nearly won it for them in regulation time. You've got to acknowledge the Blues and where they're at. They are clinical in the facets, and statistically it stacks up. They'll probably want to take their opportunities more than they did against Highlanders. I think they'll get the job done.
Bryn?
Yeah, I think with how the Blues forwards are playing, I think that's an area they'll be licking their lips. I think the more around how much the Reds put them under pressure, they'll be thinking around how they can execute that under pressure. And then I think also just how their forwards are playing in general. They're just beating teams up and they're able to win contact areas, especially in the 22 area. They are just very clinical in there, even though they have made some mistakes, but they are very physical around that breakdown area. And I think the the game management, I think, with Stevie P and how they're playing the game when they haven't got momentum, they're able to win through their kicking game as well. So, yeah, I think it'll be a step too far for the Canes.
Cool. What about the Chiefs? Do you think they'll get it done in Brisbane?
Yep, they will continue. They will continue their dominance against the Reds this week.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yep. Good-looking team.
They're just, as I said, complete package at the moment.
Yeah, looking good. Luke Jacobson's looking good. And Nanu Satoru's looking good. David McKenzie's looking good.
I think he's the key, though. If they lose him, they do lose a bit. Like, I thought Josh Ioane played really well in all the minutes he's had. But it seems to be, you know, he's like the Richie Mwanga for them by the looks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's another Aotearoa Rugby Pod for the week. Jipper, thanks again, mate. And Brent, appreciate your time, as always.
Thanks, boys. Always a pleasure, never.
We will see you next week. Please send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Get into the comments section on YouTube. Get in touch with us. Get into the tipping competition and join our league. Appreciate you watching, listening. Whether you're doing it on Rugby Pass, on Sky Sport, or you're looking at the audio pod, we appreciate you coming into this and enjoying our Aotearoa Rugby Pod with us. Catch you next week. Matewa.